How can people lead good lives without ultimately hastening global collapse? The answer lies in fairness. While billionaires fly into space and build remote bunkers, it's clear we cannot fight the climate crisis without addressing the gap between the rich and poor. In Just Earth, leading environmentalist Tony Juniper proves that inequality isn't just about who suffers the consequences, it is the main obstacle blocking action, and it has been for decades. Just Earth is available now from Bloomsbury Continuum, wherever books are sold.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today. You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
On a warm summer night, a woman named Tina Marcott finishes the late shift. She gets to the parking lot to find her tires slashed. Then, moments later, she vanishes. As Tina's family is grappling with her disappearance and police search for leads, the unthinkable happens. Just days later, another colleague of Tina's named Tom Keeter is found crushed to death by a forklift. What happened to Tina? And who could have wanted Tom dead? Join me this episode as we piece together clues from one of the strangest cases you'll ever hear. Welcome back to Avery After Dark. I'm your host, Avery Ross. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Make sure you're following along wherever you get this podcast. Leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want all these episodes early and ad-free, join the Patreon. Linking that below in the show notes. Our story begins with a woman named Tina Marcott. In June 1994, 30-year-old Tina was living in Rapid City, South Dakota. Tina had a job at a lumber grader called Black Hills Molding Company, which specialized in fabricated wood and millwork. Tina was an East Coast native from Massachusetts and grew up in New Hampshire. She had two daughters with her long-term boyfriend, Patrick Gleason. The two had lived together for over 11 years, and Patrick, just like Tina, worked at Black Hills Molding. Now, let's get into the night in question. On June 23rd, 1994, Tina worked the late shift. Around 12:36 a.m., Vicky Riddle, Tina's best friend, heard the phone ring. Vicky, having been asleep, was pretty groggy, but answered the phone to hear Tina very upset. Tina told Vicky that she had just gotten off work, but wasn't able to drive home because she went out to the parking lot and found that her car had a flat tire. She tells Vicky it's so flat she can't even drive on it. It's late after a long shift, Tina just wants to go home and finds her car is not drivable, so she's understandably frustrated. She's stranded. Vicky tells Tina, hey, it's okay, I'll come pick you up, just give me a few minutes to get dressed. Before Vicky even gets the lights on, Tina says, wait, hold on a second, Vicky. A car is pulling up. Let me see who this is. Tina leaves the phone and goes over to speak to whoever is in the car. A few moments pass. Tina then returns to the line and tells Vicky, hey, never mind, you don't have to come get me. Tom is here and he's going to give me a ride home. Vicky is confused and asks, wait, Tom? Tom who? Tina says, oh, you know, Tom, who used to work here. Vicky says okay and is relieved that her good friend Tina is no longer stranded and was going to be heading home. Tina and Vicky say their goodbyes and hang up. Hauntingly, this was the last time anyone would hear from Tina Marcott. Hours pass, and at home, Tina's long-term boyfriend Patrick is growing concerned. because Tina never makes it back from the late shift. This was very unusual for Tina. Patrick said if she was going to stop off for a drink or was running late, if something came up, she would always let him know. Tina and Patrick were practically like husband and wife at that point, so he felt something had to be wrong. After waiting for hours with no word from Tina, Patrick gets in his car and drives over to their work at Black Hills Molding. There, he finds Tina's car locked in the parking lot with a flat tire. And Tina, nowhere to be found. Vicky also learns that Tina never made it home, and she immediately calls 29-year-old Tom Keeter. Tom Keeter was the only Tom that Vicky knew of that worked at Black Hills Molding. And this was really the only Tom that she believed Tina would be referring to in that phone call. According to coworkers, Tina and Tom were casual acquaintances when they worked together. They weren't necessarily close, but this was the only Tom that Vicky knew of. So Vicky finds Tom Keeter's number and asks him, "What happened last night? Tina never came home." On the other end of the line, Tom flat out denies giving Tina a ride. Says, "No, that wasn't me. I didn't give her a ride. I don't know what you're talking about." So that afternoon, there's a meeting. Patrick and Tom show up at Vicky's house. They sit down and ask her what she knows. What did Tina say on that last phone call? Tina tells Patrick and Tom exactly what happened. That she got a call from Tina around 12:30 a.m. Tina was frustrated to find her car had a flat tire and was not drivable. Then, as Vicky was offering to come pick her up, Tina said a car pulled up. At this point, Tina told Vicky that Tom, the one that used to work at Black Hills Molding, was going to give her a ride home. And then they said their goodbyes, getting off the phone. Now, according to Vicky, as she's recalling this conversation, Tom is becoming defensive, going so far as to accuse Vicky of being drunk or something, telling her that she misheard, that it was Ron, not Tom. And Vicky's like, "Ron? Who's Ron?" Vicky knew what she heard. But Tom continues to deny that he gave Tina a ride home or was anywhere near her work last night. He just keeps telling Vicky that she misheard. She was tired. She was groggy. She didn't hear it right. But Vicky is very certain of what she heard from her best friend. Tina and Vicky were close. They talked a lot. Vicky was the first person that Tina called when she found herself in a difficult situation. That showed their relationship. They knew each other very well. And Vicky knew what her friend told her, that Tom was going to give her a ride home. And then she went missing. Vicky continues to reiterate, "The only Tom that I know that used to work at the company is you." According to Vicky, during this conversation, Tom is glaring at her and not acting himself, but does admit that, yeah, he was the only Tom that he ever knew that worked at the company too. Then there's a shift. Patrick looks over at Tom and begins to wonder, were Tom and Tina secretly hooking up? Patrick straight up asks Tom, "Wait a second, is there something going on between you two?" And Tom says, "No, man, no." But this raises even more red flags for Patrick. He's even more suspicious now because, according to Patrick, Tom had a temper, and if he was accused of doing something that wasn't true, he was the type of guy to become enraged, even throw down, start a fight. Now keep in mind that Tom Keeter is married to a woman named Nancy, and they have children. So for Patrick to accuse him of being unfaithful, having an affair, Patrick believed he would have freaked out on him. Like, "How dare you accuse me of something so awful?" But Patrick said he mildly dismissed it. Very passive. So safe to say, both Vicky and Patrick are thrown off by Tom's demeanor during this meeting. We'll be right back.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
You're back with Avery After Dark. And time continues to pass with no sign of Tina. Vicky saying she continues to hope that all of this is just one big misunderstanding and that Tina would show up at any time. But that didn't happen. Finally, Patrick and Tom go to the police station and file a missing persons report. When they get there, they tell police what they know, and Tom even offers to take a polygraph, continuing to deny that he had anything to do with any of this. Investigators interview Tom and ask him about his whereabouts the night that Tina disappeared. He tells them that evening he was playing softball, claiming he dropped a friend off at his house around 11 p.m. that evening, but then he says his Pontiac sedan broke down. Patrick said his car broke down on East St. Patrick Street, near a grocery store called Super Duper. And right underneath a street lamp, he said he tried to fix his engine, but saw there was a problem with the carburetor. But he tells police that he stayed there working on his car for 3 to 4 hours, and tells investigators that he didn't get home until 3:30 a.m. What are the odds that at the exact same time, Tina finds she has a flat tire and goes missing, Tom also has car trouble and is unaccounted for hours? So police get all this down, and after this, Tom goes home. And investigators go to check on Tina's car and find it still sitting in the parking lot. And they find something very suspicious. Tina didn't just have a random flat tire that night. Police see that someone had slashed it with a knife. This is very disturbing. Based on the shape of the puncture mark, they believed someone had stuck a knife in the sidewall of the left front tire. And to them, this suggested foul play. Next, police want to sit down and speak with Nancy, Tom's wife. And it turns out to be pretty shocking what she tells them. Investigators ask her about the night that Tina went missing. She tells them that when Tom got home at 3:30 a.m., she got up to greet him, as he had not called to let her know that he would be home late, so she didn't know where he had been. Nancy tells police that when Tom walked into the house, he passed right by her. No small talk, no hello. Tom went straight to the laundry room, where he removed all of his clothing, his softball uniform, and even his shoelaces, and threw all of it in the washing machine. So Nancy's asking him what he's doing. He told her that he got dirt and oil all over himself when he was working on his carburetor. So, to summarize, Tom says his car broke down on the side of the road in town under a bright street lamp, where he claims he worked on it for hours. But there are no witnesses saying they saw any of this, and he never notified his wife that he was going to be coming home late. Investigators canvassed the neighborhood exactly where Tom said his car broke down, and they couldn't find one person to confirm Tom's alibi. In fact, three witnesses stated that they were up and awake at the time and would have seen the car if it had been there. And when Tom finally does come home at 3:30 in the morning, he urgently does a load of laundry. Although we hear this, investigators hear this and think, talk about suspicious. Apparently Nancy believed her husband Tom, saying that he said he had car trouble and she trusted that was the truth. But police aren't so trusting. Investigator Dean Guthmiller of the Pennington County Sheriff's Department said that things were not adding up with Tom's story. And this led him and the other detectives on the case to believe that Tom was almost definitely involved in Tina's disappearance. They immediately go to the Keeters' home and request Tom's clothing from the night Tina disappeared be handed over to them. They also have Tom's car towed. They want to search every square inch of this vehicle. And all the while, Tom is telling Nancy that someone was clearly trying to set him up to take the fall for this. And they were doing a very good job. On June 26th, 2 days into Tina's disappearance, as they're searching Tom's vehicle, Nancy said that Tom received a phone call. The caller's identity was a mystery to her, but she noticed that Tom was very quiet and subdued for the rest of the night. only mentioning to her again before they went to sleep that he was being framed and he didn't know what was going on. And Nancy stood by her husband, saying that she believed that Vicky misheard Tina on the phone that night in regards to no witnesses seeing Tom working on his car for 3 hours. She never really had an answer for that. Police meet with Tom again, straight up asking him if he was romantically involved with Tina or wanted to be. Behind the scenes, police have this theory that it was Tom who slashed Tina's tire that night, then sat and waited for her to get off work. Knowing she would be stranded, he then offered her a ride home. There would be no other reason for Tom to be there that night at Tina's workplace because he didn't work there anymore. Investigators believe that Tom planned all of this out. Tina's tire was slashed, so she couldn't leave, which is just horrible. But the one thing that Tom didn't take into consideration was that Tina would have called Vicky. That phone call changed everything. In terms of motive, police believe that Tom could have done all of this so he could have the opportunity to be alone with Tina and make a move on her. Investigators' theory was that Tom made an advance towards her that night. He was rejected, and it resulted in Tom killing Tina. We'll be right back.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
You're back with Avery After Dark. Police also felt that Tom, according to their interviews and speaking with others who knew him, was a very angry man with a tendency to become violent. If you recall, Patrick, Tina's boyfriend, said that Tom was the kind of guy that would start a fight with you if you said something he didn't like. Investigators see that in his record, Tom, as a teenager, was charged with burglary and also once convicted of simple assault. Detectives also find that Tom had a history with drug and alcohol abuse as well. Tom also has no credible alibi. He claims his car broke down. But all police hear is that he was unaccounted for 3 to 4 hours and then came home and washed his clothing. Detectives ask Nancy if there was ever any physical violence at home. Nancy says no, only a few occasions where Tom shoved her after he had been drinking. Police also ask around to see if there was ever any evidence of Tom being interested in Tina. Speaking to friends, did he make comments about being attracted to her? Was anyone aware of any sort of crush he had? But police stated they weren't able to find anything concrete in that regard. But really, everything else, evidence-wise, was pointing straight towards Tom, and he knew it. There were really no other suspects in this case. There was no reason to ever really look at Patrick, Tina's boyfriend. There was no talk of any sort of issues in their relationship. And if he was the last one with her, on that phone call, Tina would have told Vicky, "Hey, Patrick's here. He's gonna give me a ride home." But that didn't happen. The only person that Tina mentioned that night was Tom Keeter. 3 days into Tina's disappearance, police visit Tom at his work, Forest Products. They had found something in his vehicle. They reportedly told Tom that they found blood in his car and were going to be testing it to see if it matched Tina's. The next day, on June 28th, 4 days after Tina disappeared, Tom's coworkers at Forest Products, this wood processing plant where Tom was employed, looked out into the lumber yard and saw something very strange. They're squinting to see, saying, "Is that what I think it is?" And it was. Two legs sticking out from under a forklift. It was clearly a body. They run over and find this was Tom Keeter. He had been crushed to death by the forklift. He was dead. And now there is another mystery. Investigators question, did Tom do this on purpose? Was this some kind of an accident? Or was this murder? And where was Tina? Police arrive at the scene and find Tom's body underneath the forklift, and they begin their investigation. Ultimately, they didn't feel that this was an accident or murder. This didn't look like some horrible freak accident or someone had attacked Tom. From their investigation, police felt it looked like Tom laid down and let the forklift run over him. As there were no drag marks, no sign that Tom fought the machine in any way. Tom was also around 200 pounds, so the idea that someone could drag him and set this entire scene up without being seen, that was also hard to believe. This forklift itself was loaded up with a lot of wood and set in motion to roll straight ahead. So in theory, Tom could have turned it on, jumped out, ran ahead, and let it run him over, taking his own life. For Nancy Keeter, she looked at this and felt that someone murdered Tom and was continuing to set him up to take the fall, theorizing that this unknown killer could have knocked Tom out, then dragged him in the path to make it appear that he took his own life. Again, police find that to be very far-fetched. They didn't find any evidence of that. They found that the forklift had crushed him to death. Police interviewed Tom's coworkers, and they said they didn't see any unknown people at the lumberyard around the time of Tom's death. They didn't hear any screaming matches, yelling, fighting. According to police, this appeared to be a setup by Tom. There was no evidence of an assault, no injury to the head, nothing. And furthermore, police noted that the forklift he was using moved at such a slow pace that if this was some kind of accident, Tom would have had the time to get out of the way before it would have crushed him. But Nancy Keeter continued to disagree, stating, quote, "Tom wouldn't do that. He wouldn't leave me and the kids. He would not do that. I won't ever believe that," end quote. Nancy wholeheartedly believed that someone, again, identity unknown, came after Tom in that lumberyard, attacking him, and then crushed him with the forklift. And this is yet another setback in finding Tina, locating her, as the number one suspect is now dead. As the search for Tina continues, Nancy Keeter gets an attorney and a private investigator to help prove that someone could have murdered Tom. John Kolbach, the PI that Nancy hired, jumps into the investigation and really zoned in on the question, why Tom would have chosen such a painful and horrific way to end his life? Is it really reasonable to believe that he would do this? But on the other hand, is it really reasonable to believe that some mysterious killer snuck into Tom's work and murdered him in this way? That seems very unlikely. We'll be right back.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In The News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're back with Avery After Dark. Investigator Kuth Miller, a detective who was on the case, believed that Tom took his own life and said, quote, "I believe that Tom was very overwhelmed as to what was taking place and needed a way out," end quote. And the pressure was building. The day before Tom is crushed by this forklift, police pay him a visit at his work and say, "Hey, we found blood in your car." After Tom's death, the Occupational and Safety Health Administration fined Tom's work for his products as they found the parking brake on the forklift was faulty. Dr. Val Farmer, a clinical psychologist who was also brought onto the case by Nancy and her attorney, said he rejected the idea that Tom took his own life in this way because he didn't believe there was evidence that Tom felt guilty about Tina's disappearance or was depressed. But this, to me, contradicts what Nancy stated, that in the days following Tina's disappearance, Tom was withdrawn and quiet. And again, there is still no sign of Tina. Police continue with their theory that this was deliberate by Tom. And even ran tests. They investigated, took a forklift, and determined that it was 100% possible to set the forklift in motion, run ahead, and be run over by it. And investigators had an answer to the private investigator's question, why would someone end their life in this way? Police believed Tom did this so that Nancy and his children could receive a payout, benefits. If this looked like an accidental work death, Tom's family could get a payout. So that's why someone would set up their death in this way. Investigators believe that Tom murdered Tina, and his alibi fell apart because he didn't foresee Tina calling Vicky that night and mentioning his name. That's when it all came undone for him. During the investigation into Tom's death, I keep reiterating, Tina is still missing. For months, police looked into places that Tom Keeter frequented. Investigators were asking the public for assistance in finding Tina. They gave the public information about the clothing she was last seen in, the items in her purse she would have had on her. But month after month passed with no sign of her. Finally, 16 months after Tina went missing, on October 15th, 1995, Tina's body was discovered under a wood pile at Tom Keeter's work. An employee was moving some lumber when he lifted up a pile of wood and discovered a decomposed body. Through dental records and the clothing found on the body, police positively ID'd this as Tina Marcotte. An autopsy was done, and it was found that Tina died from blunt force trauma to the upper left side to her head. Really such a tragic and sad outcome to this case. Police continued to work on the case for nearly 20 more years, but now consider it closed, with their prime suspect dead. As for Nancy Keeter, she continued to believe, even with the discovery of Tina's body at her husband's work, that Tom was framed. I think there's something to be said about not wanting to believe that your husband, someone you love, could be capable of something so horrifically evil. A little over 4 years after Tom's death, Nancy finally got the insurance death benefits she fought so hard to receive. Nancy stating that her family should be entitled to thousands of dollars in workers' compensation. Going on to say that she wished police would investigate this case more. There are leads, according to her. And she doesn't believe that police followed up on them. A judge ultimately stated there was not enough evidence to prove that Tom had taken his own life with a forklift, and therefore, Nancy and her children could receive the benefits. Patrick Gleason, Tina's longtime boyfriend and father of her children, died of a heart attack in 2015. Patrick never remarried and stayed single until his death, which I think says a lot. And in the years since, Black Hills Molding has closed. A more recent update in the case, one of Tina's daughters, named Sherry, got on Facebook years back and made a post. It read, quote, "I am Tina's daughter. After we moved away from Rapid City, I got in contact with the detective that worked my mom's case once I was older and had questions. He had me and my father, Patrick, go to the police station where I live and give them our DNA to test against the blood found on Tom's shoe. And it came back about 99% match. If Tom was still alive, they would now have enough evidence to put him in prison for the rest of his life, end quote. And in turn, guess who responds? Nancy Keeter. She gets on and claims that police don't have any blood evidence on anything, going on to say, "I don't know why they are telling you this. Rest in peace, Tina." In response, Sherry stating, "They do. Police found blood on Tom's sneaker." Then it became a back and forth argument. It seems like no matter what was brought forward by police or Tina's family, Nancy Keeter was not going to hear it, continuing to believe that Tom was set up. The idea that there's some criminal mastermind out there that did all of this to Tom, set him up to take the fall, it's just not logical at all. So much of this case goes back to that phone call between Tina and Vicky. During that conversation, Tina said, "Tom, the one that used to work here, is giving me a ride." Tom was unaccounted for during the time of Tina's disappearance. Did not have an alibi. Washed his clothing after getting home in those early morning hours. Acted suspiciously in the days after her disappearance. Then ends up dead. Many believing he took his own life. Then Tina's body is discovered at his workplace over a year later. These are the facts in this case. And when you just look at the facts, it's clear to see why police consider this case closed. But I'll say, to slash someone's tire, a woman's tire, and then sit and wait for them in the dark is truly so evil. It makes my blood boil and makes me so sad for Tina. There's something so powerful about Vicky's role in helping solve her friend's disappearance and murder. Vicky clearly cared a lot for Tina. And if not for Vicky coming forward with what she heard that night and continuing to stand her ground, who knows where this case would be? As always, drop your thoughts on this case in the comments here on YouTube. You bring up really great ideas, and please let me know what places and cases you'd like to see next on the show. And I'm excited to let you know that I'm working on some really exciting stuff for this spooky season. I'm so thrilled for you all to see, so stay tuned. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Until next episode, I'm Avery Ross, and this is Avery After Dark.